Oh, that's a very good response. I feel like you're all awake. How many of you are here for the first time? Not many. Okay, well, good. How many of you know me?
Yeah.
Oh, quite a few. I feel like it's old homecoming. How many of you wish you didn't know me? Ushers, throw them out. It's good to be here. It's good to be back. Dr. Martin is obviously not here today. He forgot to announce last week that he was supposed to attend a Sunday school convention, I think in Iowa. It was a big thing. And so the reserves got called out, and here I am. But we're going to have a good time today because we're going to be talking about something that I think all of us have an intrinsic connection to, and that is dreams. Dreams. How many of you have ever dreamt of things? Now, I'm not talking about a dream like one young guy said over there, oh boy, I've been trying to get somebody to talk to me about that for years. No, not those type. Dreams of vocation, dreams of aspiration, dreams of goals that we reach for, dreams of life, dreams of things we want to be, and things that we have tried to become but somehow have failed in the process. Now, how many of you had any of those types of dreams? Boy, I tell you, all of you should put up your hands. When I ask you to put up your hands, don't worry about it. I'm not going to call on you sometimes, but don't worry about it. I'm trying to get audience contact here because I'm kind of, my preaching style has changed drastically over the last few years, and it's basically a style in which I just want to give you me, what's inside of me. And I got a lot of excitement inside of me today because of this issue. Let me tell you how we got to this issue. I take a class twice a week, this class is a part of my dream. It's a part of my dream. My dream is to think a thought and then to translate that thought into the body, or flesh it, if you will. And in the elements of motion, this is where all my life, I've had a problem thinking things and translating it into motion. So I'm taking a martial arts class. That's pretty hard to do. You know, you translate things and you think about what you know you should do, but you're not, and you try to get it into the motion of it, and, well, I might show you a little of it and what I mean when I say it's so very difficult to do this type of thing. And then, of course, in the realm of dance also is ballet and things. It's just such a beautiful experience to be able to think and feel and flow out through the physical form to express yourself. This is my dream. And I've had this for years, and we'll be talking about that just a little bit. But I was sitting on the floor with this girl that was taking martial arts, and we got to talking, and she kind of was giving me a little background about what she did. And she said, and then I was into modeling, but I guess I wasn't good enough for that. And I just looked at her, almost stunned, if you will, and said, you weren't good enough. You know, and it kind of came out, and there was this pause, and she said, yeah, I wasn't good enough. And that triggered something in my head about how many times I have said that about myself, not being good enough. And that triggered a feeling inside me with respect to dreams, our aspirations, our goals, and how we reach for these goals. And when we fail, the immediate feeling is, I guess I just wasn't good enough. And we hit the pits. Now, how many of you have felt that?
Oh, sure.
Have we all? Uh-huh. Have we all? I mean, how many of you are with me? How many of you are asleep today? I mean, you just don't dare raise your hand. How many say, it's too tired, it's 9:45 in the morning. Come on, quit giving me an exercise class. All right. Let's get into this. I want to, instead of taking questions today, because really you didn't come to listen to me answer your questions, you came to listen to Walter answer your questions, and Walter is the Bible answer man, and quite frankly, I don't want to touch that title with a 10-foot pole. He's the one that's the Bible answer man, not me. Now, if it's something that's urgent, if you have an urgent question after the class, I'll be out there, because I know they kind of get a little antsy if I go over. I need a watch. Somebody give me, you know me and my watches, right? I need a watch. Can I have a... Oh, this is nice.
No. Oh,
that's a nice watch. It's got an alligator band.
It's all paid for.
It's all paid for? All right. All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll see you. Okay, it's got a second hand. Is that really the time, 10 o'clock? That is the time. Oh, my. All right. Rather than take questions today, what I'd like to do is to kind of just move into the foundation of what I'm calling today the greatest dream. The greatest dream. And my text for today is Luke chapter 22, verses 24 through 34 and 54 through 62. This is the story of Peter and his denial of Christ three times. Okay? Luke 22, verses 24 through 34 and 54 through 62. Now, just let me say, before we begin into the meat of what we're going to be talking about, that we need to think just a little bit about what the image of God in man is. What is the image of God? And I noticed that a lot of questions people have is, well, what is this image? Well, let's just kind of think for a moment what the image of God is. The image of God in man is taken, really, we can take this from Romans chapter 7. It is the ability, if you will, the power, if you will, to participate completely in all facets of existence. Now, that's really neat. All facets of being itself. For God is being. In other words, God, from God, all being springs. He sustains it. He is through it, Ephesians chapter 4. He is around it. He is the originator of that being itself. Now, how many parts does being have? A little louder. Not all at once. How many parts, no, not our being, how many parts does being have? Existence itself. Two. Spiritual and physical, right? Yeah? Okay. So, we are talking about existence, if you will, on two levels. A spiritual side and a physical side. The physical is the expression of the spiritual. And from the spiritual, the physical springs forth. So you have creation. Right? Right?
Right.
You're my spokesman.
Right.
Okay. I will ask him all the questions, and if he says right... No, I'm only kidding. So he's going to say yes or no, and you can stone him if he's wrong. All right. Now, we are talking about, therefore, when we talk about God, a being that can extend himself into both facets of existence. God can and extends himself into spiritual existence. God is spirit. But from God comes the realm of the spirit. Angels, for example. Our souls, if you will. These are spiritual entities that God has created us with, okay? And God sustains those things, too, because they are things. They're spiritual things. We are a spiritual thing. An angel is a spiritual thing, okay? But also, on the other side, you've got the physical side of reality, okay? In which that same being, God, can extend himself into that which is physical. Because he sustains that which is physical. Acts chapter 17, Ephesians chapter 4, Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 through 16 and 17, okay? So you have God extending himself in two directions simultaneously, sustaining both and participating completely in both, the spiritual side and the physical side. Now, we have been made in that image. Now, that's key. It's not that God is a physical being, like your Mormons might say, or that God is exclusively a spiritual being, but rather, the image of God in us is the dynamic power to enable us to extend ourselves into both spiritual and physical in all of its fullness. Now that is a tremendous experience, if we can capture it and understand what that means. The angels can't extend themselves into the physical realm and participate completely in the experience of the physical realm. Why? They're spiritual beings, says the book of Hebrews chapter 1, right?
Right.
Right. Okay, there's my man. Okay. On the other side, plants, animals, and inanimate objects like rocks cannot extend themselves into the spiritual side of reality, right?
Right.
Okay. So, what we've got is the only other particle of being itself that can do that is who? Right.
Right.
Right. And as a result of this, we can experience the fullness of life in all its completeness, because we are made in the image of a being, God, a structureless structure, if you will. That'll blow your mind. You think on that. Contemplate that for a while. Structureless structure. Whoa, how am I going to get into that? Think about it for a bit. A structureless structure to the point that nothing can stop us from moving into both realms simultaneously. Which means simply this. When we move into that which is spiritual, what do we also move into if we're truly moving into that which is spiritual? Right. The more we appreciate the spirituality and experience the spirituality of life, the greater our experience of the physical will become. So now I can look at you and I can experience God coming out of your being, because I can see him expressed through the physical form. On the other side, when I move into the flesh, I move into the intensity of the flesh because I see the spiritual coming through the physical. It's a dynamic experience. Everything opens up. That's the meaning of all things become new. But we've got a problem. You see, the problem is sin. The problem, unfortunately, is sin. When we fell in Eden, we basically lost the innocence. We lost that beautiful balance that Adam had. Everything Adam saw was an experience of God through the physical. Everything Adam experienced was spiritual through the physical, and as a result, the perfect experience of that which was physical. But sin blocked our view. So now we enter into, instead of this beautiful extension into both realms simultaneously, experiencing the fullness of both simultaneously, we move out of balance. Now what happens is, when we move into the physical, what do? That's all we see. We don't see spirituality coming out of the physical. Instead, what we see is the physical and the physical alone. Now you are opposed to me. You are separate from me. We have no tie. Before, I brought my image to you. You brought your image to me. The images were the same. We extend ourselves both into both realms simultaneously and join together in the middle in love. But now, I see only the physical form. And I either do one of two things. I try to control it, because there's fear that arises. There's a separation. I mean, we see physical. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people sitting in this front row. They're all separate. Or are they? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people. How many images? One. Same image. Image of God. Image of God, image of God, image of God, image of God. Expressed differently. Expressed differently. Yes, individuality. But one image, you see. Now when I look at the physical form, I don't see the image. I see the physical. And so the spiritual is blocked. And you know what we do? When we abhor the flesh that way, or when we cling to the flesh that way, when we push away from the flesh that way, you know what happens? We move that perception into the spiritual, and the spiritual itself becomes a thing. And you will find all of your cults, and unfortunately a lot of people in the church, which is why so many of the people in the church go over to the cults, feel that spirituality is as much of a thing as physical reality. I am spiritual. How do I know? Well, because I don't do this and I don't do that, and I do this and I do that. That proves it. Proves nothing. Because the element of truth in whether or not we are in balance is what we are experiencing with regards to the totality of life itself. Now, imbalance, therefore, is moving into the physical, clinging to the flesh, lust, if you will, or trying to push it away because we're afraid of it, getting angry at it, attacking it, if you will. And so all the problems we face today with respect to life is based upon that perception of separation as opposed to oneness. The image of God in man, when it's in balance, moves us into both realms at once. When it's out of balance, it has two elements to it. And Paul describes those elements in Romans chapter 7. The good I would, I do not. The evil I would not, that I do. Two sides. Now, we're all there. We all, therefore, have two elements within our image. The first element is strength. That's the good I would. Right? Right? Is there anybody here that is completely weak? Would you put up your hand? Completely weak. They won't. I don't think so. That's true. If somebody would help me, I'll try. You know. All right. There's nobody here that's completely weak. Now, is there anybody here that's completely strong? Would you put a hand? Whoa, look at all those hands. No. Okay, so don't you see? The good I would is that image of God that's in us, Paul says. The good I would. If I do the evil I would not, it is no longer I, he says, that am doing it, but sin that dwelleth in me. So the good I would, if you will, is that perfect image in balance. The evil I would not is that image out of balance. And so our deeds flow from that. Now, our dreams will always express the chemistry of that balance or that imbalance as we move to seek to fulfill them. And that's the foundation I needed you to have right now so you were aware of where we were going with regards to the story of Peter. Because we will discover how a dream is formed and how a dream becomes reality and what the supreme and greatest dream, in effect, really is. Now, that's my prologue and that's my question time. So, with that, where are the ushers? Ushers. Yes, we're going to now come to that time where we need to let go of that which is physical and enter into that which is spiritual. We are going to dig into that which is physical, i.e. purses, wallets, and pockets, and give up that which is physical, i.e. paper. And we really need paper, people. We need paper. And just see the spiritual side of what that means. What does the spiritual side of an offering mean? A piece of paper, a dollar bill, a $5 bill, a $10 bill, a $100 bill is an expression of you and your labor. And you know something? To put that in the plate, to just put that in a plate, means an awful lot. It means an awful lot. And so I'd ask that, first of all, if there are any of you that are here for the first time, I would ask that you fill out a card, just put up your hand, and fill out a card that the ushers will give you. And what this card will do is put you on a mailing list, okay? And Walter will then send you, month by month, a letter, if you will, a newsletter describing to you some of the current events in the realm of the cults. I think you'll find it very helpful. It comes out, I think it's once every month or two, isn't it? And you'll be able to support his ministry and his work in that way. Secondly, my other announcement is a lot of you have been asking about the Trinity tapes. I don't think Satan wants these tapes out on the market. I really... But they are going to be out in 2 weeks, okay? So if you are interested in getting or procuring the 6 tapes on the doctrine of the Trinity, they'll come in a nice set. Call Christian Research Institute and ask for nobody else but Clark. Okay? And put your order in with Clark. There are only 100 copies coming out right now, and I'm trying to keep the cost down as much as I can because all I really want to do is turn it around and put more out on the market. Because I feel that, you know, I feel that it's me. It's me. And it's something that I feel as if I want to give to you who are interested in perhaps experiencing the life of God as I have experienced the life of God and even move beyond that into your own particular experience of Him. So let's bow for a word of prayer real fast. Lord, we just ask that what we give right now might not just be seen as paper, but that might be seen as a representation of ourselves. We give ourselves to You in many ways. We would ask that what we give might be used for Your ministry. For it's Your ministry that has brought us into being what we are right now. We thank You for the privilege of meeting here, and we pray that these funds will be used to support Your word as it goes forth and teaches people how to live the fullness of eternal life right now, today. In the name of Christ we pray. Amen. Okay. Now while the offering is being taken, I want to just proceed to read the scriptures that I was talking about. You can just relax. And let me read these. Starting with verse 24, Luke chapter 22. And there arose also a dispute among them as to which one of them was regarded to be the greatest. Well, that must have been a neat dispute. I know we never have any problems like that in the church today, but... And he said to them, "The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who have authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. But let him who is the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as a servant. For who is greater, the one who reclines at a table, or the one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at table? But I am among you as the one who serves. And you are those who have stood by me in my trials. And just as my Father has granted me a kingdom, I grant you that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, and you will sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission." That word demanded is more asked or requested in the Greek. "To sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that when your faith, or that your faith may not fail, and you, when once you have turned again, strengthen your brothers." And he said to him, "Lord, with you I am ready to go both to prison and to death." And he said, "I tell you, Peter, the cock will not crow today until you have denied three times that you know me." Now jump down to verse 54. "And having arrested him, they led him away and brought him to the house of the high priest, but Peter was following at a distance. And after they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter was sitting among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the firelight and looking intently at him, said, 'This man was with him too.' But he denied it, saying, 'Woman, I do not know him.' A little later, another saw him and said, 'You are one of them too.' But Peter said, 'Man, I am not.' And after about an hour had passed, another began to insist, saying, 'Certainly this man also was with him, for he's a Galilean too.' But Peter said, 'Man, I do not know what you are talking about.' And immediately, while he was still speaking, got the last two words out of his mouth, the cock crowed. And the Lord turned to Peter and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had told him, 'Before a cock crows today, you will deny me three times.' And he went outside and wept bitterly." That is a heavy story. It's a heavy story because it talks about dreams, people. It talks about goals and aspirations with regards to ourselves and what we so easily proclaim to be our dreams, and then how we sometimes always seem to fall by the wayside. I think these passages are perhaps the greatest passages we could ever come up with in the New Testament to demonstrate what it means to be free. Really? You say, how are you going to relate freedom to that? Oh, there are 13 ways. Yeah, I got 13 gems, a smorgasbord of 13 beautiful truths that I felt God leading me to as I was doing this in my study yesterday. And I tell you, I may not get through all 13, but bear with me. Bear with me. If you don't like spinach, so we'll try squash. Here we go. First thing, we are free in. We are free to desire the substance of our dreams. Verse 24, "And there arose also a dispute among them as to which of them was regarded to be the greatest." Now, while the dream of being greatest had no real substance, Jesus did not disallow them to feel it. Now that's important. That's important. You know, we got this thing today in the church. People say, "Oh, I would like to be this, or I would like to be that, or I would like to be rich." Somebody says, "You're not supposed to feel that way. You're not supposed to feel that way." "Oh, I'm not supposed to feel that way? Okay, then, I just won't feel that way." And that's the way it goes. You know, we got a real problem today. I lived in the church from 17 on up through two seminaries, and let me tell you something. You know my biggest problem? I couldn't admit to who I was and what I was and what I felt, because I was always afraid that somebody would tell me I shouldn't be feeling that way. Well, here are the disciples walking with Jesus for darn close to 3 years. And now at the tail end of his ministry, he's just getting to be arrested, they start fighting and bickering and yelling and screaming at each other as to who's the greatest. 3 years walking with Jesus in the flesh, 3 years. Jesus didn't say, I've walked with you 3 years and you're arguing about that. That's stupid. You shouldn't be feeling that way. No. No. What am I saying? He allows us to desire the substance of our dreams. You have a dream? I don't care what it is. You have a dream? Face it. Talk about it. Admit it. That's the only way you're going to begin to examine its real substance. Secondly, we are free to deface the substance of our dreams. Again, verse 24. Let me tell you something. The dream the disciples had was, who is going to be the greatest? I am the greatest. But you see, the problem was, the issue wasn't who was going to be the greatest. The issue was, what is the meaning of great? That was the issue. And the only way Jesus could bring that out was to allow them to think it in the first place and fight about it. It was then that he's able to move into, what does it mean to be great? And that's important. You have a dream. I want to be rich. Oh, you shouldn't feel that way. No, 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 no. Feel that way. I want to be rich. Now, what does it mean to be rich? And why do you want to be rich? What does that do for you? What happens if you were rich? What would happen if you didn't have to work at all? Oh, boy, some would say, well, I'd kick back. If I didn't have to go to work tomorrow morning, I'd go to church tonight. Huh? But I'm not rich, so I can't. I'm not supposed to dream of riches, so I can't go to church tonight. Isn't that the way we think? No, no, no. The issue, we are free to deface the substance of our dreams. We are free to take a dream and to hold on to it without really knowing its meaning. Jesus permitted that. He permitted that. They were arguing about greatness. They defaced the meaning of greatness. Moving us into our next point. We are free to discern the substance of our dreams. Verses 25 through 27. And he said to them, to the kings of the Gentiles, lord it over them, and those who have authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. But let him who is greatest among you become as the youngest and the leader as a servant. For who is greater, the one who reclines at a table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table? It's a rhetorical question. It's a rhetorical question. Why? Because of his next statement. But I am among you as the one who serves. There's a contradiction there. If the one that reclines at the table is greater than the one who serves, and Jesus, who is the greatest, the perfect and complete and pure and total and full image of God fleshed, without sin, and he is serving, how are you going to reconcile those two? Here are the disciples reclining at the table, and here's Jesus serving them. There's a question here. There's a paradox. He's challenging the disciples in their heads to think about the meaning of greatness in relationship to service. And what service means. We're free to discern our dreams only if we think about our dreams, fess up to what we feel, put it out there, and now begin to examine their substance. Oh, we all grab for dreams. But if we just never admit to them, we can never discern them, we can never understand ourselves. Let me tell you something. It's because of your dreams that you are what you are right now, where you sit. If you never had a dream, you wouldn't be sitting here. But we're also free to devote, I like this, I like the way I, this is, I was really trying to, you'll notice all these begin with D's. I was going through my thesaurus, and I'm trying to do is just trying to impress you terribly with my ability to do all of this stuff on the D level, okay? Devote and dazzle the substance of our dreams. We are free to devote and dazzle the substance of our dreams. 31 and 33. Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. Jumping into 33. And he said to him, Lord, with you, I am ready to go both to prison and to death. I am amazed. Whoops. I am amazed that Peter said that. And yet when I look at myself, I'm not amazed. Jesus gave Peter a warning right there, and then one verse down later, bang, he gives him his dream. And he says, I'm ready to go with you to prison and to death. And Jesus just said, watch out, Peter. Satan's going to sift you like wheat. But it didn't stop Peter. Why? Because of the discussion he just had or was having with the disciples as to who's the greatest. And the people in that discussion didn't hear what Jesus was saying with respect to service. They weren't really moving into themselves at that point. All they were worried about is, who is the greatest? And so Peter comes up and says, Lord, I'm going to go with you to the cross, to death, with all your trials. Even though that warning took place. Now, why did he do that? He did that, first of all, probably to make himself important. How many of us do things? How many of us profess our dreams? How many of us say what our goals are in order to impress people? In order to almost give a measure of a worth to ourselves. I am going to be and I am going to do thus and so, and I've got this, and I've got that. We surround ourselves with our goals, and it's almost as if we profess the goal before we have made the goal. And we receive immediately upon profession, oh boy, that's really neat, that's really neat, that's really great. Some of us hold on to our dreams for that type of affirmation. It's almost as if we don't profess our dreams to people, we have no worth. It's almost as if without the goals we're moving towards, the greatness of those goals, the glory of the goals, and we profess them as our own before the fact, we have no worth. People won't accept us. And so they say, well, people come up to me a lot, and they say, where do you teach? What do you do? I said, I'm an insurance man. You didn't know that? No. Where do you teach? What do you do? I said, I give of myself, and I'm trying to learn how to be a man. People don't know how to figure that out. I didn't think you had to try and figure that out. I said, I do. I really do. What it really means to be and experience the full humanness of what I am, of how God created my image. That's the only dream that I have, and that's the only dream that we'll see, is what effectually is where Peter has or will arrive because of Christ. But we use our dreams to dazzle people, to impress them. And Peter did that to impress the disciples. Oh, he had a tendency to do that. To impress the Lord. And we do that in our churches. We give and we give and we give of our time, we give of our money, we give of our service. And you know how you can always tell whether all of that stuff has been used to impress people? When somewhere down the road, something happens in a church, and the guy that has done all of that feels like he's kind of on the outs of it. Right? And then you'll I love this, man. I really do. And then you get this thing, I've given all of this to that church, and I've given all my service and time to that church, and I've been a devoted member, and I've come through Sunday by Sunday, even when nobody else came through, and even when it snowed in Southern California, I was there. And it's like they're listing all that stuff they did to prove to the Lord that they're worth his time and his life. Let me tell you something. And this will cost you a nickel at the door. The measure of your worth is not your dream. The measure of your worth is the life that has been invested in your image to bring it into its full and complete experience. That's the measure of your worth. And that, my friend, that, my brother and sister, is the life of God. And you can't get higher than the life of God. There's no commodity you can attach to yourself in the realm of things, be it spiritual or physical, that is greater than that measure. Because all things come from that life. You see. You don't have to dazzle people with your dreams. Although Peter did. Again, we are free to design. Now, this is, catch this. Design, develop, describe, and direct the substance of our dreams. How'd you like that? Design, see, I'm trying to dazzle. Design, develop, describe, and direct the substance of our dreams. Verse 33. There it is again. We go back to it. Lord, with you I am ready to go both to prison and to death. Let me tell you something. Peter structured his dream, gave that dream its meaning, told the Lord how he was going to perform that. That is, he described the means that he would take to prove that structure, and then he committed himself to it. He committed himself to it. All from his own mouth. And we're free to do that. We are free to hold to anything. We are free to do anything we want to do. And structure it. And say, this is how we're going to do it. And no matter what it takes, we're going to follow the means we're setting for ourselves to do it. And I am committing myself to it right now. And everybody, whoa! All right, yeah. And then you got to do what you spoke. You see, you've already got the glory. You razzle-dazzled them. So now, even if you reach the end, well, so what? It's expected. You've already said it. And it comes from our own mouth. It comes from our own lips. We are free, however, also to doubt the substance of our dreams. Now, this is where it gets heavy. Verses 54 through 57. These verses really cut to my heart. They really do. This portion. Because I tell you, people, I'm not preaching at you. I'm sharing with you because everything that I've said so far, I've experienced. I know what it is to do that. And you do, too. But I also know this experience that we're going into. And having arrested him, they led him away and brought him to the house of the high priest. But Peter was following at a distance. And after they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter was sitting among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the firelight and looking intently at him, said, this man was with him too. But he denied it, saying, woman, I don't know him. People, at that moment, Peter understood for the first time just maybe what it took, the means that it took to fulfill the words that came spilling out of him in his moment of glory as the disciples argued, who is the greatest? And he doubted. He drew back. Now, I've done that. I told you before that one of my dreams was to be able to dance. To move. All my life I've been afraid to go and move, express myself in a flow of dance, in the flow of what I'm feeling inside, translate that into a bodily expression. We do it with speech a lot. I can do it with words. I've done it with words all my life. But to be able to throw my whole self into that and move. Well, about a year ago, somehow, I found the courage to do that. And I felt, I'm going to be me. I'm really going to be me. And it doesn't make any difference what happens. And so, I went onto a dance floor and tried, you know. And I kind of really got into it. I said, oh, wow, this is great. I feel so free. Well, about 6 months after that, you know, I never felt freer. And about 6 months after that, my sister had a birthday party for somebody. And it was in a restaurant, and they had a dance floor there. And so I got up and started doing my thing. And when I got off the floor, a person that was in the party said, where did you get that style from? I said, oh, it's my own. She says, thank God. Wham! You know? I mean, nobody wants to go out and look like a jerk, right? You know, nobody wants to feel they're walking into that type of a thing, you know. It all came back, and I doubted, and I've never been on a dance floor since. Now, that, I know that sounds a little funny. I know it does, but for me, that's important, because I'm struggling with that. Because the issue is my pride. That's what the issue is. The issue is me being me versus what somebody else thinks about what they see is me. Because when we are ourselves, it's the hardest thing in the world to give that out. And let me tell you, when you do it in motion, you've given it out. You can't retract it. Well, I didn't mean that. You did that. What do you mean you don't mean it? It's a hard thing. And that point of doubt confronts us with ourselves. And Peter was confronted with himself, because the supreme dream for Peter was to follow Jesus to the very end. The supreme dream was to be there. That's really what his self was. But he doubted. And not only once, but we are free to devastate the substance of our dreams. Verses 58 through 60. I'm not going to read them right now, but 58 through 60. He did it three times. The Lord gave Peter a really good shot. Really did. It wasn't just once. I don't know him. Oops, I didn't mean that. Cock-a-doodle-doo! And it's over, man. No. Three times. Three shots at it. He could have stopped the cock from crowing if any one of those times he had said, yeah, you're right, I know him. Where are you going to take me to? We have the freedom not only to doubt our dreams, but we've got the freedom to devastate them. Because every moment of our lives, we have an opportunity to become the dream we have spoken, we have felt. Every moment of our lives. And then we are free to dissipate the substance of our dreams. 61 and 62. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter, and Peter remembered the word of the Lord. 62. And he went outside and wept. Wept bitterly. Bitterly. Peter stood before his dream and looking into the eyes of the Christ, of the eyes of Jesus, realized how very far he was from reaching that dream. How very far. It was inside of him. It was inside of him. But how far he was from reaching. And as he looked into the eyes of Jesus, there was that division between them. Luke didn't have to say, because he remembered the da-da-da-da. And Jesus looked. And that glance was all it was. He knew. He knew. He's devastated. Devastated. And then we're also free to desert the substance of our dreams. Verse 62. And he went outside and wept bitterly. That moment for Peter, that must have been That must have been a terrible moment, because when you lose your dream, you die. And Peter died. Wept, the Greek has it, with intensive agony to the very depth of his soul. He's devastated. That's heavy. Again, I know that feeling. But we are also free to discover the substance of our dreams, the real substance of our dreams. And here's the positive note. Verse 61, again I go back, and the Lord turned and looked at Peter. What did Peter really see when he saw the Lord looking at him? I'll tell you what he saw. He saw his dream. He saw his dream. That's what his dream was. But he saw something else. And this is the neat part of Christianity, people. He saw a face that knew he would fail before he failed. And that face never changed. Those eyes never changed. His love was the same before he failed as after he failed. His belief in Peter was the same. It never changed. Why? Because what Peter saw when he looked into the face of Jesus was himself. How do I know? Because Jesus is the image of the invisible God. And we are the image of the invisible God. And when we look at Jesus Christ, what we see is how we were before sin, back in Eden, Jesus, the second Adam. We see what we are now contrasted to what we were back in Eden, because we are confronting Jesus the Christ, our perfect image, and we are what we are in the present. And there's a contrast. And then we can see, when we see Jesus, what we can become in the future. For Jesus promises we can be like Him. We are like Him. The difference is sin. And that's the neat thing. He's taken that into Himself. So when we look at Jesus, we look at the very substance of ourselves. And the very substance of ourselves, get this point, people, please get this point, is our dreams. There's not a dream here that doesn't come from the substance of ourselves. There's not a dream that we have that doesn't come from within us. It may not be expressed properly, we may not know the dynamics of what it is, but there's not a dream that we can conjure up within ourselves that doesn't come from our image. And Jesus has given us the entire freedom to examine it all. Now, what does that mean? Oh, it's very significant. It's very significant. Remember this point, though, before we just move on. The substance of our dreams comes from our image. Jesus is our image perfected. When we look at Jesus, we see our own substance. When we look at our own substance, we see the substance of our dreams, the real substance of our dreams. Next, we are free to deliver the substance of our dreams. Back to 31 and 32. Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail, and when you once again have turned, strengthen your brothers. He knew he'd fail. He knew he'd fail. But the neat part about this is simply this. If we have a dream, and we're going for it, and we fail, our tendency in the flesh is to avoid facing that failure. Because you see, we make that thing that we were going after the measure of our worth. But we see a balanced image does not do this. A balanced image realizes the measure of our worth is not that, but the life of God. The life of God given for us. The life of God that took our failures into Himself. The life of God, therefore, that allowed us to look at our failures as we looked at our failure on the cross. For we put Jesus there, and when we saw Jesus, we saw where we belong. But Jesus took it. He said, Father, forgive them. That blanketed it all out. That means any failure that we have, we can look at square in the eye and say, yes, I am weak. In this area, I have failed to reach my dream because of my weakness. And now we analyze and look at what that weakness entails. Why is that weakness there? What is the chemistry of that weakness? And by just having the courage, the simple courage, to look at that weakness begins to turn to strength. Why? Because we understand it more. We can see why it is there, and now we can begin to build it up. And let me tell you something. That is the meaning of thinking with the mind of Christ. That is the thinking of being transformed by the renewing of your mind in a spiritual context as the Holy Spirit moves through you to give you the courage to look at that weakness as to why you failed. Did you get all that?
Yes.
Woo! Good. I feel expressed. But secondly, we could fail because we may be too strong. We may be too strong for our dream. You say, how do you say, what do you mean we can be too strong for our dream, for our goal? I remember a time, long time ago, when I was about 17 or 18, I was witnessing to a Jehovah's Witness. And I was so strong in my knowledge of the scriptures with respect to how to debate with a Jehovah's Witness that I came on to this poor housewife that really didn't know much about Jehovah's, but because I saw Jehovah's Witness and not a human being, I started to really give out all the scriptures. And man, I bamboozled that poor woman with more scriptures. She had it coming out of her ears. She didn't know whether she was coming or going. She just looked at me. What'd you say? You know? Oh, boy, did I come on with strength. Sometimes we need to realize that strength may need to be tempered. And that's the meaning of humility. So that instead of flooding a person over with our strength, we flow with a person, a little at a time. But again, Jesus gives us the opportunity to face that strength and temper it with humility. And then we could fail in our dreams because we were ignorant. But you see, that's the neat part about it. The neat part is that the strength of our image conjured up the dream. If it were not so, we wouldn't have dreamt it. If it were not so, the goal we set before ourselves, which was very admirable, Peter's goal was very admirable, where would it have come from? We wouldn't have dreamt it. We wouldn't have seen it as a possibility. That's our strength. So, Jesus says you failed because you're ignorant. Why? Well, you got the goal right, that's your strength, but now what about the other side? The means it took to get there is our weakness. That's our imbalance. Peter didn't know what those means were until faced with the trial, and now he's called to the task. But you see, Jesus gives us the power to face that side of ourselves too. So now what we've got is looking at both sides of ourselves simultaneously by the courage Jesus gives as we look into that face and he says it's okay. And now we understand ourselves in a greater way so that if we wish to continue to pursue that goal that we set, that dream that we set before us, we can do so. Or we may discover as a result of our failures in this, another dream emerge and move into that way because of the reality we've discovered in our own failure, in our own weakness as well as our strength, both coming at us. The good I would, the goal, the evil I would not, the means to the end, that was the failure. I see both. Jesus gives me the courage to look at it. Now I understand myself in a greater way. Now I proceed because maybe now I have other dreams, or maybe I need to pursue this and continue this with a newfound strength. We can make it our reality. And so, we are free then, in summarizing and in closing, to declare the substance of our dreams with reality. Verse 27 and verse 32. I won't read them, the dealing with he who serves. Verse 32, Jesus says, when you turn again, Morris, commentator, says that that means examining, re-examining your tracks, backtracking to see where you went off when you turn again. This means that when we realize the error of our ways, if you will, how we failed, why we failed, a new strength comes out, and now what can we be? We can be ourselves, people. The supreme dream is being ourselves. And the supreme dream is following Jesus, because that's ourselves. That's freedom. Be what you are. Be who you are. And here's where the faith comes in. Because Jesus says, I pray that you might have faith, strength in your brothers. It takes faith to be yourself. Let me tell you, it takes faith for me to just walk in here, unannounced, you expecting Walter Martin and getting Art Waitling. That takes faith. That takes faith. You don't walk into an audience when they're expecting one thing and getting something else. But sometimes that's the way it has to be. The point I'm making is it also takes faith to stand up in front of you and just be me. And I didn't do that for years. 3-4 years ago, I preached. Now all I want to do is to share. Just give you me. If you don't like it, fine. Come to me later and I'll show you some other things you won't like. But if you do like it, fine. But this is the point. How do you serve? When you are being yourself, you are giving what you really are. And there's not a soul in this place that can say he is served by somebody who is being what he is not. The supreme dream is to be yourself, whatever that entails. And if you blow it, Jesus is there. If you don't, Jesus is there. But Jesus is the true measure of your worth and the self you can become, that perfection. Be yourself. And in doing that, the dreams that you have will become reality. as you discover the reality that exists within them. We can all do it. I thank you for your patience. I thank you for your time. I had one more point, but that was point 13. In lieu of Halloween, I will dismiss it. And I'll say God bless you. It's good to see you all again. And I hope you take this away and bring it as much meaning as I've found it to have in my own life. God bless you.